And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. And of course, we have open lines and we'll get right into them when we come right back. Hey, welcome back to Open Lines. George Norrie with you. And of course, we take your text and tweets. Tom's getting ready to do one of those. And let's go to the phones. Annie in Alabama to get us started. Hello, Annie.
Thank you, George, for taking my call. I'm tormented by a really old song. And there's a new song which uses the same melody. However, the title is changed and the words are changed.
What was the old song?
I think it's Everly Brothers. Do you think you could identify it?
I might be able to. What's the name of the song, though? Do you know?
The new song is Live is the name of the group, and All Over You Acoustic is the version. All Over You is the song, and it also says on YouTube, Acoustic Lyrics. This is the best version. It sounds the most like the Everly Brothers. Do you want me to play it, or do you want to play
No,
it?
No, not right now. I'll listen to both of them off mic, and then I'll make a report next.
Explain the meat shower.
Well, but tell me, why do you even care if it's the same song?
I care about music. Music is my life. But I can explain the meat shower. You think aviation started with the Wright brothers? It started in Paris, France, when Benjamin Franklin was present for the launch of the first balloon. And in 1852, Gifford had the airship with three propellers. And 26 years later, the meat shower took place. And I think it could have been a bird strike on one of those airships.
It could have been. How do you come up with these things, Annie?
Well, I know a little bit about the history of aviation. And I knew that Benjamin Franklin witnessed the launch of the first balloon. I considered that to be the first aircraft. It was in the 1700s. He was ambassador to France.
Have you ever been in a hot air balloon?
No, I don't want to be in one.
Why not?
Well, they can be dangerous. I've heard of people getting tangled up in power lines.
That happens sometimes. Annie, thanks. Next up, we've got Eric truck driving in our favorite states of Indiana. Hello, Eric.
George!
All the states are our favorites, actually.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, George, the next time you have one of your Bigfoot experts on, like David Hatcher Childress, Lyle Blackburn, Linda Godfrey, I got a question. We've heard the stories about the giant, the red-haired giants that were killed by the Indians in Lovelock Cave. I can't remember if that was Lovelock, Arizona, or Lovelock, Nevada, out there. And anyway, they were chased into the cave, and they were either smoked out or burned alive. The question that I have is, I've been listening to a lot of these books on audio about Bigfoot by a fellow by the name of Sheehan. And he has all these stories that people have come to him and told him, personal eyewitness accounts of Bigfoots. And one thing that stands out for the people who have seen the real big ones, the Bigfoots are like 10 to 14 foot tall. They talk about these long, reddish brown or red haired big feet. And my question is it remotely possible that the red-haired giants that were killed by the Indians in Lovelock Cave were not giant red-haired humanoids, but in reality, long red-haired giant big feet?
Yes, it's very, very possible that they might. Very astute, Eric. I've always thought of that possibility as well. You know, eight-footers and things like that, but they could have. You know, because I think the Sasquatch has a human-type face to it, covered with hair. You see the eyes, but the nose and mouth, but they've got like whiskers all over, part of their body here. Text and tweet, what do you have for the night, Tommy?
From Greg in Reno, what's the last book you read or have started to read?
Blitz by David Horowitz. And then, of course, all the guest books that we get. I read them as quickly as I can and take notes. We had our guest on last night. Talking about the, you know, poltergeist, you get that. Love
The Exorcist,
all.
Man. Huh?
Oh, that was strange. And then the guests we've had on are very, very astute.
Have you
what
ever?
They do.
Well, wait. I know the answer to this. You haven't, but I was going to say, have you ever read It by Stephen King?
Not in its entirety.
No. You don't like clowns, so there's no way.
I don't like clowns. There's no way I'm going to read a clown book from cover to cover.
I just cracked that thing. He is so good.
By the way, their people listen to our show. He's got a staff of people.
Well, Stephen, come on on.
You know, I'd love to have him on. But when I get back to L.A., let's go through a whole list of guests that I want to get on the show. I want to get Paul Anka on and a whole bunch of people.
We shall.
Let's do it.
Okay.
Okay, next up, let's go to Frank in Hollywood, Maryland. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Open Lines, Frank.
Howdy, George. Glad to be back with you.
You too.
Friday night, when we were talking, the night you had Mr. Hansen on, what a great interview.
Thank you.
I didn't get to say what I wanted to say, but I'll leave that for another time. I want just 2 minutes with you.
All right.
In tribute to the truckers, there's a song called 6 Days on the Road. It's the truckers' anthem. They already know about it. But there's a version by the Flying Burrito Brothers that it just will knock your socks off. The group is made up of three former birds. The steel guitar player is Pete Kleinow, Sneaky Pete Kleinow, they call him. And the band is disbanded now, but they put out the best version of that song. If you could pull that up one day and play it for the truckers, I'm sure they would enjoy it.
And what's the name of the song? What's that name again?
Six Days on the Road. It's the Trucker's Anthem. It's been recorded by several artists over the years. Dave Dudley.
It's an oldie, though. It's been around, right?
Yeah, it's been around. But remember, the Flying Burritos Brothers version, with the featuring Sneaky Pete Kleinow on the steel guitar. Now, what I want to talk about tonight is the coronavirus. Now, I thought there was a treaty against producing biological weapons, and not all the countries signed it. But could this be a remnant of Joseph Mengele and the Nazis' experiment with biological weapons, and the Japanese experiment with biological weapons? And could a virus be engineered in a laboratory? I won't call these folks scientists, but could it be engineered to have a delayed mutation, a second or third gear?
Yes, 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 yes to everything you've said.
Over a year period where it mutates and goes into this third gear.
It's almost hibernated and then it changes.
Yeah, hibernating and causing more havoc. Now, my step-granddaughter turned 18. She went down to Ocean City, Maryland. We have a 7-mile beach there. Everybody goes there. And we told her, you shouldn't go there. So she went. It was all the high schools went down there. And they wanted to show some skin, of course. And she came back okay, took a test and whatnot. And I was wondering, did the beaches open too soon? Because this thing is getting out of hand now in some states.
Well, that's a good question, Frank. Did everything open too soon? Or should they have kept everything open in the first place? First of all, we really don't understand this virus. As you were rattling off the possibilities of where it came from, I don't think we can rule anything out. I mean, we have been experimenting with coronaviruses for years and years. And, the last major epidemic that we've had, pandemic, was 102 years ago, the Spanish flu. In my opinion, nature does not act the way this virus is acting. There's something else going on with it, and it's obvious that something is going on with it. And our people, our medical technicians, are not being upfront with us. They know more than they're telling us, and I think they owe it to us to just say, this is it. This is how it started. We either gave it to the Wuhan lab or they were working on it. But why in God's name would somebody even want to play with these things unless it was for some nefarious reason? You don't just make these viruses to have fun. Something else is going on. Next up, Jim is in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Jim, thanks for calling.
Hello, George. Number one, let me thank you for just being on the radio. You have kept me company on many a long and lonely night.
Well, thank you. More to come, my friend. More to come.
I worked nothing. I'm basically nocturnal. I have worked so many years late at night as a military officer that I don't sleep at night. I sleep in the daytime. And you've kept me company all these years.
Perfect.
Oh, yes, I remember Art very well. What I called you about, and Tommy said he thought you might be interested.
All right.
I have a imaginary friend who's anything but imaginary. She's a spirit who's been with me since I was about 7 years old, and I'm 73 now.
Jeez.
And I am one of the few living direct descendants of the real Pocahontas. No, she was not a cartoon character. She was a real woman.
She was the real deal, wasn't she?
Right. But I have to tell you, without going into a lot of detail, that I had a very sad and lonely childhood. After my grandfather killed himself, who I worshiped the ground he was walking on, my mother, I think, became depressed, and that made me depressed, and she didn't think I needed any friends. Pretty quickly, people stop asking if he says, can your son go with us to get a hamburger? He doesn't need a hamburger. Can he go fishing with us on Saturday? He doesn't need to go fishing.
Oh.
He has school, you know, and that sort of thing.
So you didn't have much of a childhood, did you?
No. One afternoon, I remember it very distinctly. I was 8 years old. I was a Cub Scout at the time. Bobcat. And this beautiful black-haired girl appeared to me, and she said, "Hi, you're Jimmy." And I said, "Yes, ma'am, who are you?" And she said, "Oh, that doesn't make a lot of difference." She said, "All I'm going to tell you is I was a girlhood chum of your famous 13th grandmother, Pocahontas."
Wow.
And she has sent me to keep you company and keep you from being sad and lonely. Well, until I was about 13 years old, I could see her. One day she told me, and by the way, I asked her what her name was, not surprisingly, and she said, "You can't pronounce it. You can call me anything you like." It just so happens that I had a girlfriend who had passed away from cancer when she was six or seven years old, and her name was Susan. And I started calling her Susie, and she said, "That's as good a name as any for a girl." Well, when I was 12, this beautiful Cajun Indian girl appeared with the longest. I was fascinated with her. She had a long cascade of black hair down to her knees. Her English was a little strange, to say the least, being a Cajun. And I fell instantly in love with this girl. When we were 14, she gave me my first kiss, by the way. When she was 14, we were both 14. Her father, who was a mining engineer, was transferred out of the country. And she said, and I didn't think about it, didn't mean anything at the time. She said, "Jimmy, I will always be with you."
Ah.
Well, time marched on, not surprisingly. I grew up. I went off to boarding school, then to college, then to graduate school, and then I became an Army officer.
Did you always think of her in the back of your head?
Yeah. And occasionally I would get a whisper in my ear, never anything anything less than more than subtle, but she would say, "You don't need to be doing this now. Now stop. Take a second look." I'm convinced she saved my life overseas twice because she told me not to do something that I tend to be a little on the impetuous side, like most Scorpios. And she said, "It's not your time to go. Don't do that." And sure enough, the patrols got hit.
She was right.
Yep. Well, time again marched on. I met a beautiful blonde at Texas Women's University when I was in graduate school, whose name was Maggie, and fell in love with her. And Susie appeared to me in person for the first time in about 15 years. And she said, get away from this one. She's gorgeous. She's a scorpion. If you know anything about American Indian mythology, there's nothing worse than calling somebody a scorpion.
Wow.
When I was foolish enough, I married her, and we were married for 7 years. 2 weeks after we got a divorce, she got around to telling me that she was messing around with another man with me while we were on our honeymoon.
Oh, my. On the honeymoon?
While we were on our honeymoon.
Oh, my God.
A tennis pro. I was working. I said, what on earth made you do that? And she said, I was mad at you because you couldn't take off the 3 weeks to go on the honeymoon. You had to work. And I said, you have to understand, you got a hot murder investigation going on. You don't just put it on hold. And she said, that's why I did it. It was all your fault.
Jeez.
I thought, yeah, everything in my life, your life, it's gone wrong since we met. It's been my fault.
Now, does this Susan, I'm going to have to cut you because I'm coming up on a break, but does this Susan still come around, that apparition?
That's where I'm going. Very briefly, I am now retired from the military. I had, over the years, had gotten an occasional, and I mean an occasional, whisper in the ear. But I have met a beautiful girl from China whose name is Zing. And, I have to back up a minute. I lost the best friend I ever had to a freak accident at Christmas in 2017.
That's sad.
Her name was Ellie. Ellie and I were like brother and sister. We tried being a couple, and that didn't work at all. We decided to be brother and sister. Well, she suddenly died in this freak accident, you know, weird freak accident. Someday I'll tell you about it. You won't believe it. This is for a dark night when things are strange on coast to coast.
Which are most
anyway,
nights.
Yeah. This particular, and I had felt for a while that Ellie was still here in this cottage that she and I shared. Because some things had happened, like Ellie was pretty incendiary. She'd get mad at somebody and start throwing things. Thankfully, she didn't throw them at me, and she didn't throw breakables. But things would come clattering down out of a closed cabinet. And I thought, I know who's mad. I don't know who she's mad at, but she's mad at somebody. Well, after the deal with Zing became something from being a best friend to being the girl I'm going to end up marrying, Susan, appeared.
With more advice, right?
Yeah. Guess what her advice is? You will hate yourself forever if you don't marry this one. This is the one.
This was your gem.
73 years preparing for.
Is this the one you married?
No, this is the one I'm probably going to marry. We're now engaged.
Well, good for you. That's good. Well, look, if Susan the apparition has been right about everything in the past, there's no reason why she probably would be wrong on this one. So get married, have fun, and let us know what happens. You'll probably be announced on Coast to Coast one night. So definitely do that. We're going to come back in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and talk a little bit about angels. So get ready for that, and I'm going to be on Sunday night, by the way, with some two great guests before we get to the rest of your week started. You know, we're on the first Sunday of every month. We've got emerging artists for the first couple hours of bumper music, so we'll have that, and we've got everything rolling for you over the weekend. So stick with us as we roll into August now, folks. Unbelievable, but back with Angels in a moment. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. You know, many people say that angels are around us every day, but I can't think of a better time to call on them right now. Now we talk about communing with the divine. Angels. First of all, let me introduce Barbara for you. She is the co-founder of the Spiritual Arts Institute in Los Angeles. Having been called the Mozart of metaphysics, Barbara considered one of the foremost clairvoyants and metaphysical teachers that are out there. Barbara, welcome back.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be back.
Me too. Looking forward to this. And, of course, Dimitri Moraitis is a co-founder, executive producer, of course, of the Spiritual Arts Institute as well. Originally trained in film and television, Dimitri redirected his entire life's work to pursue the path of metaphysics. And Dimitri, I bet you're glad you did, aren't you?
I really am. I really am. It's been a life joy.
It's great to be talking
with you again.
Me too. So much has gone on since you two were last on with me 3.5 years ago.
I
can't believe how fast.
Yeah.
My gosh. I don't think of a time where we need spiritual guidance and angelic help than right now. Dimitri, do you feel that way?
Oh, absolutely. You know, they've been saying for a long time we're in a very critical age right now. The higher calls it the tail end of the scorpion. You know, it's the sort of the end of an era and the beginning of another era. And the fact that there's a spiritual renaissance that's happening on a global level, and it's not focused in any particular area, it's almost like the grass is just growing all over the planet, means that people are really ready to take another step in their spiritual evolution. And the Holy Ones tell us that even though it's a very, you know, it's a very challenging time, it also is a time of great opportunity if you capture the opportunity, if you grab it.
Barbara, how do you feel about that?
Very good.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's a remarkable period right now. You've been saying this for years, Barbara, how important the time it is right now.
Right.
Yes.
It's very important.
Yeah.
Now, you know, with this work with these celestial beings, first of all, let's get a definition of what these beings might be. Who wants to take a jump at that?
Okay, well, that's a great question because so many people talk about angels and archangels and other types of non-physical beings. But the book was primarily about what we call the spiritual hierarchy. And these hierarchy is a network of divine beings on the other side that are sort of the administrators of the divine plan. There is actually a plan for humanity. We have our free will, whether we're going to cooperate with that plan or not, but each of us has a purpose in this life, and collectively as humanity, there's a purpose, and it's supported by the divine. You know, we're getting so good at understanding the physical life right now. We're discovering things about the atoms and subatomic particles and energies we didn't even realize in the universe, but we must realize that there's an underlying spiritual cause for all of this, and these celestial beings are helping to support all of that. And by getting close to them, we get close to essentially our own mystical nature. And
friend of mine asked me yesterday, why are we here? How did we get here? You know, how was this all done? And, you know, he's a believer in God, but he just doesn't understand, like many of us, what God might be. And, you know, very perplexed, trying to get some answers to this. I think something that we're all trying to. You know, you look at the different star systems and planets that are out there. It's magnificent.
Yeah.
But then to think about a God that created all this before any of this was created kind of boggles the mind, Dimitri, doesn't it?
It really does. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago we thought, you know, the Earth was, so, you know, the universe was 6,000 years old. You looked up the stars and they were fixed in the sky. And life was kind of simple, you know, in a way. And so God was more kind of comprehensible in that picture. Now, as you say, when we look through the Hubble telescope and we see billions and billions and billions of galaxies, we say, oh, my God, how can we count in all of this?
Yeah.
But the point is we do. What the Holy Ones say is that as staggering as creation is, if one soul were missing, creation would not be complete.
That's interesting.
So we're not just part of the process. We're indispensable. You know, the difference, let's say, between an amoeba and an archangel, they both have the same spark of life within, but the archangel is more developed in consciousness. So the evolution we're going through and what your friend is saying, gee, is there God, or maybe there is, but why can't I sense? That's a discovery in consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the midst of God right now, but we're trying to awaken that awareness. And this is, again, where the celestial beings come. The reason we admire the angels and archangels so much is that they have that direct awareness of God. So when they come near to us, they bring that consciousness with them, and that inspires us to reach higher, You know, it's an old adage by the ancients. They used to say, the seeking of the philosopher's stone sets up the condition to find it. So the very questions we ask in life about God, about life, if it's a genuine thing and we're really searching, it will yield results if we stay with it until we get to those results.
Good point. And Barbara, how did you get involved in all of this? I know we talked about that 3.5 years ago. Lots of new people have joined us. Tell us how you got into this.
I could see the aura from age 3, and as it developed, I went deeper into metaphysics. So it naturally flowed freely.
And when you got into it at that age, did you get better and better and better?
Yes.
It's interesting. At 11, she studied with a hermetic scientist that taught her about what she was seeing. And in her 20s, she studied with a mystic here in Los Angeles to help train her. I know she gave you an aura reading some years ago. Maybe she can do a little update tonight to see how you're doing. And actually, she said something just before the show that she saw a brighter pink. She was kind of tuning into you a little bit and saw a brighter pink light. So evidently your love flow is getting stronger. Are you deeper in love right now?
I'm always in love, Dimitri. I'm in love with life. Let's talk then about angels. You know, when you look at Genesis and fallen angels, you know, they weren't too happy with what would be humankind. There was no interest in us at all. How do we distinguish the difference between the good and the bad angels?
Oh, boy, that's a big topic. Well, first of all, the angels, of course, are part of the divine hierarchy. But what people may not realize, some religious schools believe angels have no free will. They have to obey the will of God, so to speak. But that's not actually true. They're doing this out of their own free will. And unfortunately, it is true that some have chosen not to do that. There's an old expression, these beings have fallen from a higher place than you and I have yet reached. So they got, unfortunately, entranced with their own splendor, you know, how marvelous they were. And instead of glorifying the source of where it all came from, they started kind of glorifying themselves. And it became more a story of ambition. The reason they're doing a lot of what they're doing is ambition. They're ambitious. Barbara, you have a great story. When she was a teenager, if I may say it for her, she was getting so many different gifts that were just coming to her, almost like she wasn't asking for them. She could, for example, sit in the classroom in high school, know what the teacher was going to ask and know the answer to the question even before she asked the question. And she said, you know, I got a little cocky. You know, I started to think I was the cat's meow because I didn't seem to have to work for this. And the higher decided to kind of teach her a lesson. So what they did is they completely withdrew all those talents, those spiritual talents.
Oh, really? They just yanked them from her?
They just yanked them from her. And for a couple of weeks, and Barbara was perplexed, couldn't figure out what was going on. Then finally it hit her. Oh, my God. These talents aren't coming from me. They're coming through me.
That's right.
What we have to remember. Even any talent we have, great artistry, great skill in it, you know, we've earned the right to have it, but it is something that is coming, moving through us. And that way we don't get the ego so entrapped in it. And these fallen ones, unfortunately, have gotten caught up in the ego. And that's the danger.
You know, when we take phone calls next hour, I'm sure we'll get calls on angelic intervention, events that have occurred that have truly helped people.
Oh, yes.
Who summons them in? How do they know, for example, that person's in trouble? That, you know, they're ready to go over a cliff in a truck, and they come and turn the truck back onto the road.
Great question.
Who monitors that?
Well, first of all, and maybe Barbara can tune into yours tonight, we have literally certain angels assigned to us. Of course, we know about our guardian angels, but we also have what are known as teaching angels. And these teaching angels are kind of doing what you're saying. They're helped to monitor. And they know very quickly if something's going on, oh, George's in trouble right now. And they can come, they can summon the archangels, they can call in whatever help is needed to get you through a difficult moment.
But not always, right?
Well, a couple of things. They can't interfere with our free will. If I'm saying, I don't care what you're inspired, you know, I'm going to do this anyway. They let us do it. Okay, Dimitri, you're going to get this lesson then. And sometimes in the general free will of humanity, they have to let things happen as part of, you know, we're growing as a humanity, as a civilization, so they have to allow for certain mistakes, sometimes, unfortunately, even terrible ones, so that as a humanity, we can learn our lessons. But it's up to a point. Barbara, you were saying, this was some years ago when I first met her, during the Cold War era, that there were three times where they literally had to intervene to prevent a nuclear holocaust.
But they will do that.
Because that's too far. The results of that would have been so disastrous. Humanity would have taken ages to get back on its feet again. It would have been like what, you know, Einstein said, if we really fight World War III, World War IV will fight with sticks and stones, you know.
Well, that's so true.
Yeah, so that in those cases, they will step in. And this is also something to remember, because it's so easy, as you said at the beginning of this program, to get caught in some of the, you know, the challenges of the world. And you know,
no question.
But to realize they would not let it, you know, we're not doing this alone. Yes, we're making some big mistakes. We're polluting the atmosphere. We're greedy beyond, you know.
We're killing each other.
Exactly. We're doing a lot of things. But at the same time, the higher is there. And at the right time, this will correct itself. But what we have to do is stay strong, not to let these things disturb us to the point that, you know, we do something crazy ourselves. Stay close to the light. That's what they say now. Stay close to the light. There's never been a better time to grow in the light. Unfortunately, there's also never been a better time to get off the mark. So there really is kind of a separating going on right now, and it's just stay in the light, and even though there may be storms coming through, you know, storms pass, and then the daylight comes again. And ultimately, there is brighter days. We are heading to a new age. And eventually, when we pass our tests as a humanity, we'll get there. And interestingly enough, one of the big tests they say right now, and of course we felt it not that many years ago, is the test of wealth. Right now, there's a massive planetary test that's going on. Can humanity put, you know, the divine above financial matters? Because a lot of these problems now are being based on, you know, vested interests. People are doing this because they want, you know.
They're greedy.
Extremely, extremely. And it's not only on, you know, heads of corporations. It can be on a much more personal level. I mean, we got a little greedy before 2008. Oh, I can get into a house even though I can't afford it, you know, and there's a little bit of, you know, it's a little bit of selfishness with that. So we have to look also within ourselves, not only, oh boy, what are they doing to the, you know, what are these corporations doing to the planet? But once, if we can pass this test of wealth, we're going to be in an incredibly much better place as a humanity.
And if we can't?
Well, we're going to keep facing the lessons. We may have another 2008, and it may be worse, you know.
Yeah.
We'll keep getting, you know, it's sooner or later. You know, the challenge is sometimes the soul does only awakens, you know, it gets complacent. And sometimes it has to suffer a little bit to finally say, okay, I get this. I get this. Okay, I'm hearing you now. I'm finally hearing you. And then we respond. You know, we're not all like Barbara that has such direct communication, but I can tell you she's helped me build up a union with the higher. And when I started to build it, I realized, oh my gosh, wait a minute, they've been here all along. You know, I was getting the signals more subtly, but they've been steering this, you know, not just now, but before. They work with all of us every single day. There's that beautiful story you talked about, Genesis. Jacob's dream, you know, of the ladder that went all the way to heaven. But what was so special about that dream? Every step on the ladder was attended to by an angel. And the mystical significance of that is that every key turning point in our life, we're not alone. They're right there helping us every step of the way. From the moment we die, I mean, we're born to the moment we die, they help us through life's journey.
I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew There were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century. Your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Coast to Coast.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, Greg Bishop, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.